Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. With the criminally disgraced media baron Rupert Murdoch threatening to buy the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, we'll begin with an analysis of the media landscape from former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, the only dissenting voice on the FCC who opposed recent media mega mergers. We'll discuss his article at The Nation, The New Telecom Oligarchs, and what citizens can do to hold on to the electronic commons and the free flow of information on the internet. Then we'll speak with Peter Barnes, an entrepreneur and writer who started several successful businesses, including Working Assets, now Credo. He is the editor of a new book which the late Jonathan Rowe wrote, Our Commonwealth, The Hidden Economy That Makes Everything Else Work. And we will discuss the endangered commons, the air, water, wildlife, and wilderness that are being increasingly corporatized and commodified, and explore ways citizens can hold on to what we have left and create a balance between the commons and profit-driven capitalism. Then finally, we will look further into the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, a rider in a must-pass continuing resolution that exempted the agricultural giant and manufacturer of Agent Orange from liability and lawsuits. Stephen Schwartz, a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute, joins us. He has an article at Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, The Great Experiment, Genetically Modified Organisms, Scientific Integrity, and National Wellness. And we will discuss the suppression of research on lab rats fed with GMO grain that has resulted in tumors and infertility. And joining us now is Michael Copps, who was an FCC commissioner from 2001 to 2011 and currently heads the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative at Common Cause. He has an article at The Nation, The New Telecom Oligarchs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Copps.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And over the last weekend, you were in Denver attending a conference organized by Free Press, a two-day national conference on media reform. So reading your article at The Nation on the new telecom oligarchs, give us a sense of how the playing field is in terms of those who want to capture and control our media and those who want to free it up for the public.
Well, I think for those who want to capture and control, the playing field is looking pretty good right now. We continue with the monopolization of our media, the monopolization of our news and information infrastructure, the monopolization of our access to broadband, and I think we're all beginning to see now the possibility of that, what we thought was going to be forever open and dynamic technology, the internet and new media, starting to head down that road toward consolidation too. So those of us who consider ourselves reformers and consider this situation unacceptable to a small d, a democratic country, have been warning about this for a while. What I brought out of Denver in the Media Reform Conference, in addition to the coast-to-coast traveling that I've done over the past few months, is that we seem to be almost at something of a tipping point, a good tipping point, because I think people are beginning now to see the fruits of what reformers were talking about for a long time. Not just high cable rates in traditional media, but gatekeeping and denials of the open internet, inelegantly named network neutrality, the fights over can we unlock our handsets and all this. People are getting to see that this translates from theories of reformers into practicalities in the marketplace, and it comes into their own house and affects their own lives. So there was almost, there's a growing, and I think it's already somewhat palpable or tangible change in that direction. So I want us to I'm trying to mobilize a national dialogue on this, and I think it's beginning to form. We're trying to bring some higher level of concern in the White House about all of these issues as the president gets ready to designate a new chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, because this one is leaving. And what we would like that new chairperson to do, chairman or chairwoman, maybe, would be really to redeem some of the pledges that candidate Obama made back when he was running back in 2007, 2008. I had letters in my file as an FCC commissioner from Senator Obama, candidate Obama, saying we shouldn't be loosening media ownership rules, for example, and letting a few moguls buy up more and more properties, without understanding how this affects minorities and diversity audiences. We should have, he said, a proceeding about the public interest at the FCC. We should reassert the public interest. So I know they've been pretty busy over this first term with a lot of issues. This one didn't get the attention I thought it deserves. I'm hoping maybe we can change his mind now, but the best thing to change a president's mind, or at least confirm confirm him in the determination to do what he said he'd do in the first place, is some pressure from the grassroots.
Well, Michael Copps, I'm speaking to you from directly across the street from Universal Studios in Los Angeles, of course, and people in Los Angeles, a considerable part of the population, is quite concerned at the possibility of the only newspaper we have here, the Los Angeles Times, being bought by Rupert Murdoch, and he's indicated that he's hoping that somebody more favorable to his point of view will replace the outgoing head of the FCC, Janikowski, who left, who you just mentioned, waiting to see who Obama will appoint. So what would your recommendation to the people in Los Angeles who don't want Rupert Murdoch controlling two television stations already in Los Angeles and then controlling the major newspaper?
Well, isn't it interesting, first of all, that you're talking to me from Los Angeles and you're finding me today in Chicago, and both cities are wondering if Rupert Murdoch is coming their way and going to be controlling their newspapers. The same fellow who owns lots of other outlets, as you were just saying. What should people in Los Angeles be doing is to really be expressing to their decision makers how they think the present media landscape is serving their purposes. Do they feel that they're getting what they need? You know, there was a Pew Research study out just last week, I think it was. A third of the people, according to that, responding to that survey, said they are tuning out the local news, the nightly news in their localities, because they're not getting the kind of news and information that they want and that they're looking for. So if that's the way people feel, and I've seen that frustration around the country for the last 12 years that I've been doing this now, both within and now after the commission, let's make that known. That's how reform happens in this country. It doesn't come as a gift from legislators in Washington all tied up in a nice package with a pretty ribbon. It comes because people in the hustings demand systemic reform. That's how we've always gotten big reform. Civil rights, worker rights, the list goes on and on. That's how we get media rights, too.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Copps, who was the FCC commissioner from 2001 to 2011 and currently heads the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative at Common Cause. He has an article at The Nation, The New Telecom Oligarchs. So I'm wondering, in many ways, the healthcare debate has been hamstrung by the fact that the American people don't know how badly off they are compared to the rest of the world in terms of how much they spend for healthcare and what kind of services they get. Even though right next door in Canada, there's a perfectly good system that's being demonized over here. And it seems to the same is true in the media. In France, for example, their broadband providers and internet providers, I think it's about a quarter of the cost, and you get infinitely more bandwidth and higher speed. The same is true in South Korea. And these monopolies who control our cable access and package their products, which they heavily advertise, are giving really appallingly bad service compared to the rest of the countries in the world. And in fact, if you look at a little area down there in Tennessee, at Chattanooga, they happen to have broadband as a local utility. And they've got the fastest high-speed broadband in the country that they're offering their customers. So what's gone wrong here, and how much have you seen this on the inside, and how did it happen, in effect, that we, the country that invented the internet, should slip further and further behind in internet provision?
Yeah, well, when I went to the FCC in 2001, we were probably number one or two in the world. By the time I left, I don't think I had anything to do with this. I hope not. We were number, depending upon whose rankings you looked at, 15th or 20th or 24th. But let's take a specific example. You mentioned Chattanooga. They did build out municipal broadband and treat it as a utility. But the special interests have gone, in the last few years, into 19 states and had laws passed at the state level precluding or making almost impossible the ability of municipalities to build out their own broadband, because Comcast or Verizon or AT&T They'll want them to do it. And these are places where Comcast and AT&T and Verizon have no intention of going, and they're frank to admit that. But they don't want anybody else going there, too. So we've got Chattanooga, we've got Lafayette, Louisiana, we've got Wilson, North Carolina. You've got about 100 examples of places around the country that have built out very successfully, in many cases, their own municipal broadband. But now that's going to be that much more difficult. How did they get away with it? Because the news wasn't covered, because there's no state house reporting anymore. Nobody's holding the powerful accountable. Same thing in Washington, D.C. The last time I looked, there were like 26 or 27 states that did not have an accredited reporter on Capitol Hill. Well, how in the world do you hold the powerful accountable in a situation like that, where all these stories go unreported and go even unknown? So how did it happen? I think it happened, and this began long before the rise of the Internet. It happened because of all of this consolidation we've had in both media and telecommunications, and because we had a public agency, government, the Federal Communications Commission, that really was derelict in its duty to the public interest. So they took all of this new broadband technology and everything, and let me back up a minute. The Telecommunications Act says every citizen in the United States should have reasonably comparable services at reasonably comparable prices and the most advanced services possible. Beginning in 2001, the FCC said, well, let's not call broadband telecommunications. So they put it in a different part of that statute where there were no consumer protections or privacy protections or public safety provisions. We're the only country in the world that went through a linguistic exercise like that. We're going to call it an information technology instead of telecommunications. That really hobbled its deployment and hobbled its adoption. The only country in the world. We also have a Federal Communications Commission that seldom meets a merger or acquisition that it doesn't like. Now, thank God it finally got us act together and indicated thumbs down on the AT&T and the T-Mobile merger, but that was such a no-brainer. But the year or so before that, right across the street from where you are now, Universal Studios, the FCC approved that NBC Universal Comcast merger, which was one of the most far-reaching mergers in history because it's new media, it's old media, it's content, it's distribution, it's vertical control, horizontal control. It's the whole nine yards. And the vote went through 4-1. You might have guessed that I was probably the one vote against, and indeed I was, because that conferred so much power, so much influence on one company that is just inimical, I think, to the needs of a small-D democratic society.
Well, Michael Kopsch, in your Nation article, The New Telecom Oligarchs, you say that for 8 years I had been in the Democratic minority at the FCC, unable to rein in the enthusiasm of my GOP colleagues for even more media industry consolidation. But wasn't that supposed to change after the 2008 election?
You bet it was. And I thought, whoopee, our time has come for a consumer protection agency. And lo and behold, now we're 4 years, almost 4.5 years down the pike, and the commission is still blessing mergers. It's still in the process of eliminating public interest protections. Now, I think that, let me be fair and square, with my former colleagues, I think that the chairman has done good things in lots of areas, broadband and having a strategy rather than that let the market do it all approach that we had for the previous 8 years. But it hasn't lived up to the expectations I had. And if you had told me 4.5 years ago that the commission would be dealing right now with the new chairman's proposals to loosen media ownership, the current chairman's proposal to weaken the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership that we talked about here with regard to the Tribune and all, I wouldn't have believed you, but I would have been wrong.
Well, but the irony is that under the previous chairman, Michael Powell, who was really laissez-faire, all of his actions were done in the name of competition and free market competition. That's the ideology. But the result is the opposite of that ideology. What you end up with are these big sclerotic monopolies like AT&T. I had to give up my AT&T phone. I couldn't even get calls at my own home. the service was so bad, but yet they spend tons and tons of money on lobbyists and advertising telling us how they you can have a television that you can move around the house. So that's – meanwhile, they won't invest in cell towers. So I don't understand how – I guess it goes back to the fact that we don't know how badly we're getting shafted. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think that's a large part of it. Competition may be the mantra. Competition may be the rhetoric, but it's a special interest behind it. And right now, we have the big telephone combine proposing to the Federal Communications Commission that as we transition from plain old telephone service to Internet protocol technology, that they get out totally, almost totally, from any kind of public policy oversight whatsoever. So the end result of that is monopoly without any regulation. Now, we've had periods in this country when we had monopolies and Ma Bell and all of that, but we still had some public policy oversight. Now they're going for the whole nine yards. Get any policy requirements, public policy oversight out of here, release us from all of those, and let the good times roll, and let's continue on with the monopolization of telecommunications and media markets across the country. And that's exactly what it is in many areas, monopoly. Once in a while, you get a duopoly. You're really lucky a triopoly, but you seldom do any better than that. The competition is ridiculous. A lot of the European countries have competitive policies or other countries around the world where competitors have access to the basic infrastructure. They pay for it, but they have access, and they can offer their own different plans and all that. We did away with that, and I lived through that proposal day by day at the Federal Communications for years, and competition was dealt really a serious blow from which, unless we change direction, it ain't about to recover from.
Well, just in closing, Michael Kopps, you mentioned the inelegant term net neutrality, which certainly doesn't do justice to what's at stake there in the sense that the Internet is in many ways the last sort of bastion of free communication. It plays an extraordinarily important part in Russia, where Putin has taken over all the press but the Internet, and equally true in China. It may be what brings about Chinese democracy, and it may well be what saves Russian democracy. But here in the United States, there is a threat to corporatize it and to fast-track corporate content and to slow-track what people want in terms of what they're used to, and to do away with the electronic commons, which is really why I think the Internet has become so important and so ubiquitous. So where do we stand in that fight?
Well, the tragedy of it all is that you have this open and dynamic and opportunity-creating technology, perhaps the greatest one the world has ever seen since the invention of the printing press, maybe more so than that. So we should be using that tool, and it should be open and accessible and available to all. And we see the toll booths going up. We see the gatekeepers going up. We see data plans and rationing and this, and you can't get broadband access, and one case after another. What a tragedy it would be if the outcome, 20, 30 years after the invention of the Internet, however long it's been, what a tragedy would be if the end result of that would end up being a cableized Internet. If it was just another cable system and consumers were paying exorbitant rates and everybody didn't have access, we have to have some kind of a dialogue in this country about what are we going to do to ensure that that Internet is serving the public interest. And that doesn't mean regulating. I get so annoyed when people say, oh, you want to regulate the Internet. What we want to do is put consumers in control of their own Internet experience rather than having big companies in control of their Internet experience. What we want to do is have models on that Internet for the production of news and investigative journalism. We've lost so much of that in traditional media, but we don't have a model for it in new media. And meanwhile, the civic dialogue is kind of hemorrhaging, and issues are not being teed up that we need to be teeing up if we're going to dig ourselves out of the hole that America's dug itself into over the past 10 or 15 years or so. So it's a huge, huge question. And I think it ought to be on everybody's radar right up near the top of their list, this future of the media ecosystem. Because I don't care what issue you're interested in, that issue is not going to go anywhere until the public, who eventually will decide that issue, has the basis to make an intelligent decision. It might go somewhere. It might go the wrong way. But it's not going to go in productive ways unless people understand what issues are, unless they're analyzed, unless we replace glitzy infotainment with real news, unless we replace spin with substance, unless we replace opinion with facts. That's the need of the hour right now regarding any problem that we confront in this country. And that's why anybody listening to this show ought to get really serious about the future of our media and let their representatives and powers that be and anybody else know of their opinion and know of their determination to have a news and information infrastructure and a telecommunications infrastructure that serves their needs.
Well, Michael Copps, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Happy to be on. Thanks for covering these issues.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Copps, who was an FCC commissioner from 2001 to 2011 and currently heads the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative at Common Cause. He has an article at The Nation, The New Telecom Oligarchs. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about our commonwealth, the hidden economy that makes everything else work.
We want the power for the people. That's all we ask in our country, dear. The sick and the hungry are unable. Protect them and those who may live in fear.